I would like to welcome to the program Alex Wendell. He's the artistic producer of the Iowa Stage Theater Company. He's lived all over the country.
Sure.
He's also directing a play called The Seagull, which we're going to discuss. But Alex, I want to start by taking a look at the state of affairs for creativity in our country today. One thing that comes to mind in particular is President Trump putting his name, literally, on the Kennedy Center. And taking great pains to try to minimize certain aspects of our history from receiving the kind of exposure and discussion they've received historically. What are we looking at a march toward what we saw in China, more than 70 years ago, where the Cultural Revolution, as it was called, basically stamped out a lot of culture.
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring up the Kennedy Center right out the gate, because working in theater professionally, the Kennedy Center has always been, at least in my adult life, and I'm sure well before it, sort of a locus of what our country is holding on a pedestal as far as performing arts. We have the Kennedy Center Honors, which they've put out is going to be done for the first time ever not at the Kennedy Center. And then it has ceased all programming for at least the next 2 years. So this sort of touchstone for the professional theater world has been lost recently. And that's actually just kind of the tail end of what has been a long slew of funding cuts on a federal level and in some states that go towards nonprofit and art organizations. So it's not necessarily that we're being regulated on what we can say right now, which is where they got, in China and Russia and all of these other larger regimes that have kind of gone the same direction. We're at the point where it's squeezing out the ability to do it by lack of funding, lack of hope for a future.
So what kind of funding has been cut? In the past year.
Yeah, so there are a lot of large grants. I won't name any outright because there's a lot of lovely people that work within these companies to try and give larger grants to nonprofit arts organizations, especially here in Iowa. But they have seen less funding given to them by either the federal government or by large donors who feed into this pool, or by other organizations. And so by them having a smaller pool of money, they are now having smaller sums of money to give to these nonprofit arts organizations.
And so is it Congress that has cut funding from federal sources, or has that been a unilateral effort on the part of the president?
You could quote me if I'm wrong. I'm sure someone could correct me here, but there was, I believe, an executive order that had cut a large portion of funding. This would have been back during the Doge, that light era there. And the National Endowment of the Arts lost a huge amount of money.
Okay. And a lot of local theater companies and other creative nonprofits rely on those types of funding.
Yeah, 100%. Absolutely. Ticket sales, if you're to be putting things on of quality, you can't rely on ticket sales alone, especially if you're paying all of your staff and all of the artists. That fundraising is actually the larger percentage. You try and have them as close to each other as you can. And the hope, every company dreams of having ticket sales alone be what funds a company. But that's just not the nature. Yeah, that's a pipe dream, especially when we're paying all artists involved.
And in terms of paying artists, my understanding is that that actors are not paid very well, even if they're paid at all.
Right. Yeah. And
you're wearing a sweatshirt now that has to be at least vintage 1990, right?
Yeah. Right. It's got paint on it from backstage too. Artists in general that for theater around the country, it's hard to keep up with what a living wage is and what it should be. And there are unions that try and help both on stage and off stage to make sure that pay stays there. But not every company can afford that. Mm-hmm. So they have to figure out what stipends can I give that live within our means as a company. to make sure that it is that these artists are being recognized for the work that we're doing.
Right.
So we're actually the only company in central Iowa here, or in the city of Des Moines, that isn't considered a community theater, and that is because we do pay everyone involved. I wish it were more.
Right. And is that I mean, one thing I've been impressed with Des Moines over the years is that there's been a very lively and vibrant theater community.
Oh, yes.
I mean, there's, what, 3, 4, 5 different professional?
So there's about 5 or so community theaters in town.
Okay.
So they don't pay. They pay a lot of their staff. They pay some designers.
But professional quality acting.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's hard in a town like this where you can't have a living wage right now on performance, at least at a local standard.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of... we all trade with each other, the actors and things like that.
Sure.
Yeah. So they can try and fill as much of their work as possible.
Right. And I imagine other cities around the country are experiencing similar challenges. I mean, even in small towns, I've been to small towns in Iowa, towns of just a few thousand people that have had great theater companies.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
And they're all volunteer, of course.
Yeah, right. Right. And that's the hard part is...
Yeah.
The community theaters around here, they're so vibrant and they all have their niche. Like the educational department at the Des Moines Community Playhouse is an absolute monolith in town for educational theater.
Yeah.
Incredible. They rely on a ton of volunteers.
Yeah.
So it probably wouldn't be feasible to work at their capacity without volunteer work.
Right.
So we're just a small company that's like, we're going to pay everybody involved. We're going to do small, intimate shows in a small, intimate theater.
And again, all that's gotten more challenging with the executive order regarding funding from from the federal sources. And as you mentioned, some typical corporate and nonprofit grant organizations cutting back or having to cut back. So it's got to be challenging for theater companies. And I think, I try to get to your productions as often as I can. And I'm particularly interested in the next what's coming up next, The Seagull, which I imagine if you're listening to this program in one of the many other states that has a radio station that picks it up, maybe your town also has had a production of Chekhov's The Seagull.
Yeah.
But we're having it here in Des Moines real soon.
Very soon.
And why is this place so relevant to what we're experiencing here in the U.S.?
Yeah, it's interesting. So it had been put in the season over a year ago as sort of let's open with something that is full of love and heartwarming. It does end in tragedy. Spoilers. You know, if you've ever heard the phrase Chekhov's gun, you know how it's going to end. but... It has become increasingly more relevant because the play has a large divide in class culture.
Mm-hmm.
You have these rich people, the elite, who are visiting their summer estate home that is lived in year-round by servants and maids and the people who take care of it. And sort of the clash of culture of them just coexisting. This play was... written at a time where you couldn't be outright political in Russia at this point with your theater.
Right.
So you had to be creative in the way that you made these points. So all of it, this class cult clash, is subtle. It is something that you will read into by seeing these people live life as it is for them and go through heartbreak and love and tragedy. And... funny enough, again, not to give too many spoilers here, but the only people that sort of have hope coming out of it are the underclass individuals in the play. And that's not outright pointed at the audience. It's just the nature of how it rolls.
Mm. And how was it received back? This is what year again?
1898 would have been the revitalization of it. I believe he had done a rewrite, but it had been performed maybe a year or two before that.
Okay, and how was it received? I mean, this was back pre-Soviet Russia. This is during the time of the Tsars.
Yeah.
I mean, Russia's a mess today, obviously.
But yeah.
But we have a new czar, a new oligarch.
I was just there a couple of years ago, actually.
What? Where
I
are
was
you really?
In Russia, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That'd be an interesting conversation as well. But you know, how was it received back in the late 1800s when you had this, again, authoritarian rule?
Yeah. So it was, without getting into too much of a history lesson, it was put on and workshopped with Chekhov by Konstantin Stanislavsky, kind of the father of acting theory as we know it now. A lot of other acting theories have branched off from his, but it tends to be one of the central seeds. And Stanislavsky had the ear of the government there, as did Chekhov. And they both received the proper funding to continue, to the point that Chekhov put on three more full-length shows. And then the Siegel has come around generation after generation and actually has had one of the longest-standing runs in all of Russia.
But the I would have thought the leadership of the country, the ruling class would have been offended by the message of the Siegel, that it would have done what it could to squash it from being performed.
Subtlety.
So they fooled him? Chekhov fooled the elite?
I would, which is funny to say because Chekhov was also a part of the elite to a degree. Okay. Right? He got to live, he started as a doctor on farmland, and then had moved into being a writer, and then all of a sudden had this national fame, publications writing about him, and all of this stuff. And he took advantage of that to a degree. I've actually been out to his estate. I would have loved to have lived out like
really?
That. Yeah, but there's...
So he was no poor boy?
Not at the end. Not at the end.
Okay.
I think he might have died living in a hotel, but that's beside the point.
Maybe like Tolstoy's story as well. That's another that's a Russian I know a little bit more about.
Yeah, who Chekhov loved to reference.
Yeah, okay, good. Yeah. So wait, let me ask you this. The Siegel. Is there an actual Siegel in this play?
There is.
There is. Okay.
There's a dead one.
Yep. A dead Siegel.
Yep, there is a dead Siegel.
And why did the Siegel die, or is that giving away too much?
Because a man saw something beautiful and had nothing better to do but destroy it.
Lots of political play there as well.
100%. And that's a quote directly from the play.
Yeah. I'm fascinated by this play. I can't wait to see it. I'm concerned about where our country's going, as are many people. And is there any contemporary pushback against the play in the U.S. because of implicit commentary about our own situation?
No, I don't. I think that it's so old at this point that it's not what is having fingers pointed at it.
Okay, like John Stewart or John Oliver or
right.
Steve Colbert.
Yeah, it's not a lampoon of what's happening. It is a life as it is and life as it was is sort of what Chekhov likes to put a scope on, and then you can extrapolate what you want from there. He had written it at a time where you had to weave a pretty tight web to avoid censorship. And so how do you say things creatively? And I don't know who I can attribute this quote to, but if you treat your audience as geniuses, they'll often rise to the occasion. That people will take away what they want to take away. Some people may very well come watch our production or watch any production of The Siegel and take away, oh, there was a lot of love and these people were all falling in love and then it didn't work out and it ended in tragedy. What a sad story, even though there's a lot of comedy in it.
Yeah.
That might be what somebody takes away. But if somebody goes into it with the lens, especially of what they were living through at the time and we may be living through now, this boils down to the story of an author who is being afforded a lot of graces by the world right now, sees something beautiful and decides to destroy it because he has nothing better to do. And what does that say about class and idleness and
well, and we could have a much longer conversation about the problems associated with consolidation within media, which just got a lot worse this past week with Larry Ellison now owning what? CBS, CNN, right? And HBO. I mean, and also Oracle. I mean, there's so much consolidation. It's hard to imagine how somebody that close to the president who wants to stifle dissent is not going to make sure that the dissent within his network, within his empire, is also stifled.
Right.
And again, to me, one more reason why it's so important to have these kinds of, these kind of community-based opportunities to express oneself with one's neighbors and friends and colleagues through play, through art, through music.
Absolutely.
We have to support that.
And I see supporting live performance right now, while we're beset on each side from a lack of funding and the rise of artificial intelligence taking away a lot of artists' jobs, the support of live performance is an act of rebellion in our current culture, in my opinion.
So for those who are in my Des Moines audience, where do they go to learn more about the runtime, the upcoming schedule for the production of The Seagull?
You can either go to iowastage.org or the Des Moines Performing Arts website to buy tickets to see us at the Stoner Theater on March 13th through the 22nd.
Okay, March 13th through the 22nd.
Yeah.
All right. Good to know. Hey, Alex, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
Folks, we've been talking with Alex Wendell, the artistic producer of the Iowa Stage Theater Company.